attention, please.
This is The Drive with Josh Graham podcast. Tune into The Drive 3 until 6 p.m. weekdays on the Sports Hub.
I love it. It's brilliant.
The ACC Network was the talk of last week's ACC kickoff event in Charlotte. But while we learned of several new projects and talent hires, network officials told me a few times there was going to be a big headline that dropped this week. Well, that headline arrived this morning. There's going to be an ACC Network all-access show following North Carolina basketball this upcoming season, and episodes will be airing throughout the year. Very similar to Hard Knocks, but I bet it's not going to be a week-to-week thing. We've been consuming a lot of these programs lately, All or Nothing with the Panthers, Netflix's Last Chance U, Jason Brown, the head coach from the last two seasons with Independence Community College, a guest on today's show. Here are the things I will be most excited to follow and watch with this North Carolina series. It starts with Cole Anthony, who's the best recruit North Carolina's had since Harrison Barnes. It's been almost a decade since North Carolina had a player coming into school that's as good as Cole Anthony is, the number two overall player in the country and the top point guard. In covering North Carolina the last few years, I'll tell you the two players who are going to be the biggest stars and the camera is just going to be attracted to them time and time again. Garrison Brooks and Brandon Huffman. Brandon Huffman's dancing, Brandon Huffman's jokes. Brandon Huffman is Danny Green on the bench when he was a Tar Heel, minus all the talent and being a starter or being a top player coming off the bench. He has all the dancing, all the charisma, all the being a good teammate, just not a lot of the basketball ability, or at least not as good as some of the other bigs North Carolina has. Garrison Brooks is probably going to be playing a more natural position this year. He had a great personality. He's the one that's going to exude tip qualities that have been vacated by Luke May Williams finishing the Tar Heel. Roy Williams is on the all-time career. We're 9 wins from a ridiculous... going to ask the question, who's a better coach, Roy Williams or Dean Smith? I want to get ahead of this. Roy Williams is a product of Dean Smith's greatness. The way, I'm never comfortable being put in the same sentence as Dean Smith. So he doesn't welcome that debate. Roy's an extension of Dean's values. Point to the passer. Former assistant, graduate, focus on school. Stay more than 1 year. Dean Smith discovered Roy Williams. Roy was a high school basketball coach for 5-6 years. But Dean remembered him as a former UNC JV player. Gave him a chance on his staff. Then he went to Kansas, of course, and back to North Carolina a little over 15 years ago. The only way to compare, I don't care if you're talking about college basketball coaches, LeBron versus Jordan in the NBA debate, NFL quarterbacks, etc., etc. The only way to compare across eras is to measure impact. Not to use stats. College basketball is a lot different today than it was decades ago when Dean Smith was coaching. From a recruiting standpoint, but also bulk of games. For much of Dean Smith's career, he didn't have as many opportunities as Roy Williams has here. And when you're talking about impact, it's not even a conversation. It's not comparable. From a social perspective, the recruitment of Charlie Scott. From a basketball conversation, innovation, four corners, the shot clock being implemented as a result, many other things we see in basketball today are only existent because of Dean Smith. So I don't think it's a fair comparison, but I know it's going to happen. It's going to be an incredible moment. Des, you're a Tar Heel fan, so I wonder what would go through you and all the other Tar Heel fans, the moment it happens, Roy Williams passing Dean Smith. Dean being passed by his former assistant to become the all-time winningest coach at North Carolina. One, I think it's another chance for all of us or younger people to learn about Dean Smith, because you know that's going to be what Roy Williams' approach is. He's going to view it as another opportunity to tell people why Dean's the best. I'm not in this conversation among North Carolina's top basketball coaches. I just hope it happens at the Smith Center. I really do. If you look at the schedule, the ninth game of the year is against Wofford. It's a home game. But before that, you're facing Alabama, Michigan. You open up against Notre Dame. The 10th game, you go to Spokane to face Gonzaga. Then you return home. The 11th game is at the Smith Center. So, game 9, game 11. If the Tar Heels start 9-0, great way to start the year if you're North Carolina, and you can just go ahead and knock that out, break Dean Smith's mark in the first month of the year. But I really do hope it happens at the Smith Center. So that's something I'm watching for. What else are you looking for in this new all-access series that's going to be on the ACC network?
I feel like I'm a little spoiled because I just watched the Carolina Panthers All or Nothing. And
you finished it?
I did finish it, and it was fantastic. Like, for a Panthers fan, we never get to see behind the scenes the way they showed it there.
Could you imagine if we had that during the year, though?
Oh, I wanted it. I wanted to see them every day.
Right. Could you imagine, though, if we had these episodes throughout the year and we react to what actually happened rather than us learning that Cam's shoulder was a bum shoulder following the Eagles game a week ago? What if we learned that in the middle of October? So with North Carolina basketball, it looks like we're going to be getting this as the season is progressing.
Yeah, Carolina's social media department, they're not on the level of Duke's. I've been on record saying Duke has the best social media program in college basketball, bar none. But Carolina, they throw some little things out throughout the season, but nothing like this. So this will be a treat for Carolina fans. As for Roy passing Dean, I think you hit the nail on the head. Roy will never say that he's better than Dean Smith than anything. I mean, you're talking about a guy who they basically created the shot clock because of his offense. I mean, Roy is a great coach. Dean was an innovator. There's a difference. You know, there's things that are in the college basketball game today that Dean Smith started.
Huddling
at the foul line, you know, stuff like that.
Impact versus stats.
Right.
I don't think Tiger's going to catch Jack Nicklaus. I think Tiger is the greatest golfer of all time because of impact.
That's a
Muhammad
great
Ali,
comparison.
I think, is the greatest boxer of all time. George Foreman and Joe Frazier had better boxing records as heavyweights, even in the same era, than Muhammad Ali. Impact. When you're comparing these types of figures, I think that's what you're looking for. It is National Intern Day. Intern Nick is in our studios. So happy National Intern Day to you, Nick.
Yeah. Thank you, Josh.
See, I want to clue you in or get you involved in a way I think you could speak with some expertise here. We're going to have, all of us went to colleges in the state of North Carolina. I went to East Carolina. Des went to UNC Greensboro. You are currently a student at NC State. The Carolina Panthers begin training camp today. They are in the dorms at Wofford College. They are in the dorm rooms for the next 3 weeks. So what I want, and I'm open to putting it out on the phone lines too, and via Twitter at Sports Hub Triad, I want the best dorm room stories that you can tell on the radio. 336-777-1600. I'm looking for good dorm room stories. Are you still in the dorms at NC State, Nick?
No, not anymore.
Okay, what dorm did you stay at?
So my junior year, I've transferred in, so I was only in a dorm for 1 year. So I was at University Towers.
Okay, University Towers, NC State. Raleigh, do you have a good story you can tell us from University Towers at NC State?
The best story I could come up with, and I just missed it, but it went around for a week, everyone was talking about it, was this pledge had to run around like the hallways naked.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Fraternity life.
Yeah. So I like just got back out of the elevator and then I saw my friend and he's like, you just missed this kid. He just like ran past me naked and went down the stairs.
I feel old because the dorm I stayed at East Carolina no longer exists. It was torn down. Belk Dorm is what it was called. I remember the first night I went out and hung out with friends, and it's probably about a fifth. I didn't have my car on campus the first year I was at East Carolina. So I walked to downtown Greenville, America, 15-minute walk, and we went to one of these clubs of some sort, nightlife, well-documented, Greenville, America. And I just noticed, I've never, at that time, I was not one to get much attention from the ladies. But there were three or four that came in my direction and seemed very interested in me, and I was suspicious enough to ask them, what's the deal? What's happening here? And one of them just giggled and said, hee-hee, you look like Ron Weasley. Harry Potter, big at the time. I got so mad. I stormed out, and it is just pouring outside, pouring down rain, as if it was a Scorsese movie or Quentin Tarantino, just pouring down rain. And I'm walking. I'm not running. A friend came with me, and I looked at him halfway through. I said, why aren't we running? It's like 1 o'clock in the morning, and I remember him saying, it's like it's a Quentin Tarantino movie. So we might as well. We're already soaked. Let's just continue walking here. Speaking of Quentin Tarantino, going to see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood tonight, his 9th movie. He's only going to do 10. Speaking of movies, we've got movie lines that we're accepting for Joe Weil today, the voice of the Winston-Salem Dash. Let's hear what he did last week, some of the work from Joe Weil on the Dash broadcast that you can listen to later on tonight, every week, 7 o'clock. This is a movie line from last week.
Beautiful scenery, though, in Winston-Salem with the dark blue clouds above us. The dark blue sky hovering over BB&T Ballpark and a great Thirsty Thursday crowd on hand. They've been trying to wheel the Dash this entire ball game, trying to rally the home team. Listen to them, children of the night, what music they make. The 1-2. Outside, count it 2-2.
Right back into the play-by-play.
He's so professional.
What movie was that?
I don't remember, actually.
That was like Dracula.
Yeah, I think it was. I think, actually, I'm the one that gave him that line, I think.
All right, what else do you got?
This is a tough situation for Andrew Perez. Second and third, one out. And he doesn't want to lock up the Dash in a loss. So Z coming out essentially asking, you want to go to jail or do you want to go home?
Quality stuff.
Top notch. Tweet us at Sports Hub Triad if you have any lines you'd like to throw Joe's way when he joins us later on. Coming up, a tidbit from an unlikely source that makes me believe Coach K isn't going anywhere anytime soon. This is The Drive.
Let's get started.
This is The Sports Hub at AM 600, AM 920. Now back to The Drive with Josh Graham.
Being where we are and doing what I do, the question I get most, locally, regionally, even nationally, centers on Roy Williams and Mike Krzyzewski, always being asked, hey, how much time do they have left coaching? And before I get to a tidbit that came from an unlikely source talking about Mike Krzyzewski that might indicate how much time he has, a reminder that Brendan Marks is going to be joining us in 15 minutes. Carolina Panthers beat reporter giving us our daily report card, we're going to call it. He will be our correspondent from Panthers training camp today, and he will join us again in 15 minutes. The unlikely source is former Cowboy. Actually, no, he's a current Cowboy now. Jason Witten. He was a former Cowboy, and then he re-signed with the Cowboys after 1 year with Monday Night Football. He's returning for his 16th season. There was a story that The Athletic did talking about the relationship between Duke basketball and the Dallas Cowboys. Jason Witten had a chance to watch practice, and here's a quote he gave to The Athletic. The guy is over 70 years old and still loves coaching ball. People were asking him what his hobbies are and different things, and he said, this is it. Kind of reminded me of myself. Obviously, I'm a lot younger, and I haven't accomplished what he has, but this is what you love, end quote. I don't see Coach K stepping away until he wins another title. The guy, what Jason Witten said there is so. Even though he's past the age of 70, This is not somebody who's looking ahead to retirement. He's still firing on all cylinders right now, showing no sign of decline. Nobody has out-recruited him the last decade. Just cumulatively, nobody has out-recruited Mike Krzyzewski the last 10 years. Not Kentucky, not UNC, not anybody. And he's adapted. He's evolved his style. 10 years ago, he wouldn't play zone defense, but he needed to 2 years ago, and that team almost made it to the Final Four. He adapts a style to his personnel, not the other way around. And that's a testament to Coach K and somebody who's very dialed in even as he's past the age of 70 years old. I remember it was during the Yale game, non-conference game last year. They usually play loud music. Cameron's a loud place because of the fans and how things are crammed in there. But it was right around the time of exams. They're playing Yale. Duke is the number one team in America. Everybody's talking about the fact that this team could be as good as the Fab Five at that time or whoever. UNLV in the 90s, whoever you view as the best college basketball team. So they were going through the motions. And in a timeout, Coach K was incensed. He took off his jacket, threw it onto the bench, and just started berating some of the players. As if that wasn't enough, for some reason, I noticed Coach K started sprinting towards the scorer's table. He had something to say to the scorer's table. I'm thinking, what could it possibly be? It's a timeout. Nothing. I don't think the officials did anything wrong. It doesn't seem to be a clock issue of some sort. What could it possibly be? All of a sudden, I think it was a Black Eyed Peas song. It just gets as loud as anything you would hear in a club. As imagine you have your speaker and it goes to level 10. It got ramped up to level 13 inside Cameron. It was so loud, I had to cover up my ears. So after the game, I asked Coach, what happened there when you took off your jacket and you were so upset? I thought the place was dead, he said. I thought the students weren't into it, the band wasn't into it, my players weren't into it, exam time. So I don't have many moves. I can't do a cartwheel. I'm going to take off my jacket. And also, I'm going to tell the scorer's table to turn the music up. Let's get something going. He's the master puppeteer, and he's beyond 70 years old. He hasn't lost a step. And something tells me that Jason Capel, a year and a half ago, deciding to go elsewhere, to leave Coach K as his right-hand man and his right-hand man for almost a decade, leave to go become the head coach in the same conference. That was an indicator to me that Coach K, he isn't going to be done until he decides he's done. And that's not going to happen until he wins another national championship. He's gotten close. The last 2 years, great recruiting classes, but short of the Final Four. Very close to the Final Four. Grayson Allen had a shot at the end of regulation against Kansas that just slipped out. Otherwise, Duke is in the Final Four in 2018. This past year, Duke losing by 1 point to Michigan State in the Elite Eight. Now, nobody's going to make excuses for Duke, but the format is very unforgiving, where you have to win six in a row. So he's gotten close, and he's the one that brings those top-notch players to campus. Duke was the number one overall seed going into the tournament. 336-777-1600. Let's go to Roger in Winston-Salem, who wants in on Roy Williams, Coach K. Roger, what do you have on Roy Williams, Coach K, who does more with less?
I just think that K has gotten where he just rolls the ball out anymore. He just assembles talent. He has the number one recruiting class every year now, and he underachieves. If you look at the last 10 years, K's got one national championship. Roy's got two in the last 10 years. Roy does more with less.
Well, Roy, wait, hold one sec. Duke's won two in the last 10 years, 2010 and 2015.
So they've got two together, okay.
Yeah.
You know, look at the total wins, the tournament wins, and the Final Fours.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying, Roger. I appreciate the phone call. You have so much talent that you assemble if you're Coach K, but who's the one that assembles that talent? Coach K. I mean, if you're gonna criticize him for not winning one more game to get to the Final Four in back-to-back years, you got to at least give him credit for getting Zion Williamson over that Roy Williams guy. You can't have it both ways. Yes, Steph.
I don't think K's going to win another title before he retires, to be honest.
I'm saying it's random. I'm saying he gets the talent that he can, and he's a great coach and won it before. The tournament is so random, I wouldn't bank on anybody to win another title. I wouldn't say Roy Williams is going to get another title. I wouldn't say Coach K is going to get another title because the tournament format is so random, I don't use that as an indicator of how successful your program is.
The tournament format is random, yes, but the rosters are not. And more often than not, if you go back and look at the past five, six, seven Final Fours, with two outliers, they're mainly...
One of those being Duke.
One of those being Duke from 5 years ago, and the other being Kentucky. In 2012, usually they're going to be veteran-laden teams, like teams that have juniors and seniors, and they've been through the wars and stuff. And with the way Duke recruits, I just can't see that. I mean, it could possibly happen. It's happened before, but even that team in 2010 had senior leadership on it in the starting lineup.
Which is why I'm fascinated with this year's team, because next year's team, it's a blend of old Duke and new Duke, where you have the one-and-dones, Vernon Carey, Matthew Hurt. But you also have experience. The first time Duke has a returning point guard back since Quinn Cook in that national title team with Trey Jones returning. On top of that, you have Javon Delorier, Alex O'Connell, Jack White. They're all back. Then a couple of players that very well could be multi-year guys. Cassius Stanley and Wendell Moore. Those two players could be multi-year players. So this year could be a little bit of a blend from old Duke to new Duke. Brendan Mark's going to join us in a bit. I saw Elijah Hood, former Tar Heel running back. He got cut. And, man, he's the perfect example. It's sad, but it's necessary, what Carolina did. He's the perfect example of how tough the leap is from college to pro. Top recruit out of Charlotte, goes to North Carolina, and he just looked the part. He looked like a thoroughbred horse. He was a touchdown machine for Larry Fedora on that team that went 11-1 in 2015. But he just couldn't make the cut. Not with the Oakland Raiders, not with the Carolina Panthers. The Panthers, they needed to condense that running back room. They're looking for somebody who can take carries away from Christian McCaffrey or at least spell him a bit. Cameron Artis Payne's there. He's been somewhat proven. They drafted Jordan Scarlett out of Florida with a fifth-round draft pick. He's going to be in the mix. Elijah Holyfield was behind DeAndre Swift last year at Georgia, and before that, it was Sony Michel and a Chubb running around. Elijah Holyfield, he looks like he has fresh legs, much like Elijah Hood, just looks the part, Elijah Holyfield. So he's a promising player too. So they had to let somebody go. The part that's unfortunate, it was the first thing I saw from camp yesterday. Jordan Rodrigue had a video of Elijah Hood being dropped off by his wife and his kid saying goodbye to him, his 9-month-year-old. And within hours, the Panthers said, peace. Fortunately, his family didn't have to come back and pick him up. The Panthers had a team staffer. They felt bad enough about it. They had a team staffer drive him all the way to Charlotte. Marty Herney's son was an offensive lineman for Elijah Hood. I forget what Charlotte High School it was, but there was a tie there, and apparently Marty Herney was pretty emotional having to make that move earlier today. But speaking of the Panthers, Ron Rivera's talking about pitch count again. What will Cam Newton's pitch count be specifically? The Charlotte Observer's Panthers beat writer Brendan Marks will fill us in from training camp next.
We need to talk.
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 This is the Sports Hub at AM 600, AM 920.
The lowest form of communication.
Now back to The Drive with Josh Graham.
Thank you.
Today's Carolina Panthers training camp correspondent is Brendan Marks, Panthers beat writer for the Charlotte Observer on Twitter, at Brendan R. Marks. Spartanburg, South Carolina. They reported yesterday. Practice, I understand, is about to begin, the first one of the year. Before we get into specifics, get too far down the line of what we're looking for at camp, Brendan, we heard Ron Rivera talking about pitch count already for Cam Newton. What details, I know you were writing about this yesterday, what details do we know about what Cam Newton's specific pitch count will be?
Yeah, so basically, Josh, the way the Panthers are going to approach the situation with Cam Newton is being as cautious as possible, and for good reason, because this team is only as good as Cam can make them. And so it wouldn't be surprising at all to see Cam's reps limited today. Today's obviously the first day of actual practice, but for the rest of training camp as well. And I think when they talk about a pitch count, they're going to be talking about not just in terms of his first team reps, but as far as him going through and doing all of the first team drills. Basically, they're going to be cautious with Cam. They're going to be tracking and monitoring each throw. The most important thing is making sure that he's not sore the next day. So they'll do as much as they can to limit that.
Is there anything the Panthers learned from 2017 that they're implementing this time around with how to handle Cam and his shoulder?
I don't know if there's anything specific that they learned as far as it would relate to this plan, but I would say the biggest thing that they gained from that 2017 experience was the knowledge that they have to be extra careful with Cam. And I think that you saw over the course of last season, obviously, the arm strength deteriorated for him. The stiffness and the lack of velocity were continual problems, and they got worse and worse as the season went on. The team knows that that is something that could present itself again, and so what they're trying to do is make sure specifically that every day that Cam throws, no matter whatever the amount is as it increases throughout camp, they want to make sure that there is no soreness lingering past the day, because that is when the team doctors, at least, believe that Cam would be more susceptible to having injuries again. So it's not anything specific about, you know, the number of throws he could do or how far he can throw. It's more about the way they're handling their process that they learned back from the 2017 experience.
Former Tar Heel Elijah Hood was cut yesterday in the Panthers' backfield. What do you believe that hierarchy is behind Christian McCaffrey among the running backs the Panthers are evaluating?
Yeah, that was a brutal scene with Elijah, and I know it was really touching in the morning when he got dropped off by his fiance and his kid. So you hated to see that for Elijah, and I know a lot of people were rooting for him to get an opportunity this preseason. But the Panthers still have a lot of interesting and intriguing options behind Christian McCaffrey. Obviously, they've got Cameron Artis Payne back for another year. The team, to some extent, knows what they have in cap. They know that he's a valuable contributor. He is on special teams. But it wouldn't be surprising to me if he's a real threat to take some of the workload off Christian McCaffrey. But the two guys I'm more interested in are the two rookies, Jordan Scarlett and Elijah Holyfield. Scarlett's a fifth-round pick. Holyfield was an undrafted rookie free agent. And they both have really interesting running styles. Holyfield has great, great vision. He's able to run around defenders, whereas you've got Scarlett, who's a little more of a blend of speed and strength, but his vision isn't nearly as good as Holyfield's. How those two sort of fit in is up in the air right now. I think Scarlett has the early advantage, and he's the guy that I ultimately think could end up being Christian's main backup for the rest of the 2019 season.
It's Brendan Marks from the Charlotte Observer, Panthers beat writer on Twitter at Brendan R. Marks. Read his stuff in the Observer online at charlotteobserver.com. What exactly are the living quarters for the players at Wofford College the next 3 weeks?
Yeah, so it's actually a pretty cool situation down here. So all of the players are in dorms. They're staying in the same dorms that students will stay in at Wofford during the rest of the year. So can you imagine that you're the lucky person who gets Ship Hall 136, which is the room that Luke Kuechly likes to occupy year after year? It's a pretty cool little, you know, fun fact or trivia bit that you can throw out there.
Brenda, you went to North Carolina, yes? The University of North Carolina,
yes.
Chapel Hill?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Do you have – see, we're running things past the audience, past people on this show. We're trying to think – did you ever live in the dorms? Because we're trying to come up with dorm memories that are radio appropriate here. And I wonder if you had any from North Carolina.
Oh, I have lots of them. My first year in North Carolina, I was staying on the 10th floor of Hinton James Dormitory. So I was literally on the top floor of the building that was farthest away from main campus, farthest away from Franklin Street. So for me to get anywhere, it took at least a half hour, 45 minutes. But I would say probably one of the stranger memories that I have that's at least radio appropriate from dorm life is I remember around Halloween one year, all of the floors, I don't know if it was the resident advisors or who it was, but people would go out and just throw pumpkins off of the side of the dorms onto the basketball courts below. So it was pretty weird, and it obviously makes a humongous mess. But it's at least cool to see that people were engaged and people would come out and cheer on the balcony. So that's definitely one that stands out for me.
Give it up, Brendan. What's the Halloween costume you wore when you were in school? Give me the best one.
Oh, God. I would say probably when I was a freshman, I still had a lot of initiative. I went one year, I was Dunkin' Donuts. So I took an inner tube and I spray painted it to look like a glazed donut with sprinkles on top. And then I wore a basketball jersey and like a basketball outfit and carried around a little ball and hoop. So I was literally Dunkin' Donuts. That was freshman year. That's patented. That's patented material, though, Josh. So if you're going to use the costume again, I'd like a licensee fee.
All right. Well, we'll have to make that happen. Brendan, thank you for the football insight and also playing along with our nonsense. It's appreciated.
Absolutely. I'm happy to, and I hope that a lot of you guys are able to enjoy what we read and what we have coming out at CharlotteObserver.com.
All right, CharlotteObserver.com. You heard it from the man. On Twitter, at Brendan R. Marks, and also in the pages of The Observer. I just thought of another dorm story, and if you have a good one, 336-777-1600. Dez, first off, did you stay in the dorms? I think you told us this before. At UNC Greensboro?
Not exactly. My best friend and another friend of mine were staying at Shaw at UNCG, world-renowned Shaw dormitory. And they were supposed to have a third roommate their freshman year that was from California, and he never showed. So they had a third bed, and I was commuting back and forth from Kernersville, so it was just easier for me just to stay there with them, eat in the cafeteria, go to the parties, and do everything else. Unfortunately, I don't have a single dorm story that's fit for radio, and anyone that knows me,
boo this man. Boo!
It's true though. anybody that hung out with me in college, they are more than aware that I don't have a story to tell, and they're probably cringing in their car seat right now, hoping I don't tell a story.
You can't clean any of them up.
Mm-mm.
No names, but also just like...
We were wild, man.
References. I mean, you can clean it up.
Mm-mm.
Speaking code words.
I would be incriminating folks. And this is a small town, man. Like, people know each other. They talk.
It's not a small town at all. This is a top 50 radio market. What are you talking about? It's a small town.
I can't be responsible for going against my brothers. So I can't do it.
But you will play defense against the radio show. That's what we'll do here.
If I think of one, I'll bring it up before the show's
over. You are listening to The Drive, broadcast live in the law offices of Timothy D. Wellborn Studios. Learn more about them, timwellborn.com. You'll know when you need us. On top of that, we're sponsored by Twin Peaks Restaurant, Haines Mall Boulevard in Winston-Salem. It is your local sports lodge. That means it's the place if you want to watch a game, if you're trying to hang out with your guys, and even your girls, you want to hang out and watch sports and eat delicious food and drink delicious cold beer, Twin Peaks is the place. Twin Peaks eats, drinks, scenic views. The story I said I remembered. I once heard a commotion outside of our suite, and there was, each suite has four dorm rooms in it. I remember hearing a commotion amongst our neighbors who were good friends, even to this day, good friends of mine. I walk out, and what the bigger person who used to be a high school football player in this day, he got restrained. He had to be restrained by other suite mates because apparently somebody had dissed him or disrespected him in some way. I didn't know the details. I was awoken. I was trying to break it up. And I was the one that got in front of this guy. So he grabbed me by the back of my neck and then threw me into a concrete door. And according to them, I just dropped like a sack of potatoes. They threw me into a door headfirst. Dropped like a sack of potatoes. The next day, they were laughing about it. I asked, what was that all about? What started that fight? Yeah, man. Guy came up to me and said, hey, you want some Cheetos? And I said, no. He's like, you sure you don't want no Cheetos? I said, no, man. You want the Cheetos. No, I don't want the Cheetos! Got into a fight. And that's what the commotion was about, that I got thrown into a door and concussed.
Hold on a second here. You got a concussion from being in a fight because you didn't want Cheetos.
Oh, no.
offered
that
to
was
you?
That was the that was what started their fight. I was awoken trying to break up something in the suite, and I got thrown into a concrete door because my friend did not want any Cheetos.
Take the damn Cheetos, man.
The moral of the story is when somebody tells you they don't want Cheetos, they don't want them. No means no. Up next. Or actually, do we have a phone call here? Want to knock this out real quick? Let's go to Bill. Dorm story. Bill in Greensboro, give me a good dorm story.
Yeah, this is not as a student, but actually at a summer camp. It was the same dorm, Hinton James, which has 10 floors looking over a basketball court.
Yeah.
And we had the kids say, okay, look, lights out at 11. So myself and Chris Duke are actually the goalkeeping coach for the women's program at Carolina running the camp. And we had two kids with their lights on past 11. So for me and James, we told the kids, we're playing one-on-one, Chris and I, from the 10th floor. And we would toss soccer balls, trying to make baskets. And we each had a kid that had to run down, get the ball, bring it back up to us. You know, first one to 10, the kid could stop. So we basically had these kids running up and down, 11 o'clock at night, up and down and hitting James. You know, all the other kids peeking out the windows, watching what's going to happen to these guys.
That's awesome.
But they ran up and down. I think we finally stopped after 6 because, you know, from the 10th floor, it's kind of hard to make a basket. But the kids are running up and down, grabbing balls, running back up 10 flights of stairs, giving us the ball. We'd shoot it.
Yeah.
We'd miss. The kid would grab the ball. So that's my best memory of Hinton James.
Yeah, it builds character, Bill. That's what it does. I think my brother, when he went to North Carolina, he had a girlfriend at Hinton James. Noteworthy dormitory, Hinton James. Up next, who I believe to be the NFL's best team of the last decade. Keep it on the drive.
Here we go.
You're on the drive with Josh Graham, the Sports Hub, at AM 600, AM 920.
I've been binging Quentin Tarantino movies all week this week. Every time I hear this song, I think Pulp Fiction, but there's a faction of younger people that hear the Black Eyed Peas every time they hear this. Tonight, I'm going to see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the 9th Quentin Tarantino movie. If I had to rank my 5 favorite Quentin Tarantino movies, here's how I'd do it. Number 5, Reservoir Dogs. Number 4, Django Unchained. Number 3, Kill Bill. Number 2, the movie I watched last night, Inglourious Bastards. And number 1, the movie that featured the song you just heard, Pulp Fiction. Those are my 5 favorite Tarantino movies. I am just thrilled for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood tonight. Before I get to who the best NFL team of the last decade has been, let's go through the back. Let's go to the back in the control room. Dez, in order very quickly, your 3 favorite Quentin Tarantino movies.
I have Reservoir Dogs number 1. I have Pulp Fiction number 2. And then I've got a kind of a weird tie for 3rd. I've got Django Unchained. And then I also have 4 Rooms. Have you ever seen 4 Rooms before?
That wasn't directed by Tarantino, though.
One of them was. So that's actually the beauty of the movie.
So you're just talking about the combination, like Grindhouse?
No, well, 4 Rooms, it's 4 different stories directed by 4 different directors. And it's entwined into this hotel setting. Tim Roth is a bellhop. And he's going from room to room. And each room has a different thing going on. Tarantino's story is the last one. It's got a bunch of actors. Madonna's in this movie. Antonio Banderas is in this movie. It's a weird cult type movie that you kind of have to know about to go get it. It was his second movie he ever did, and it was one of the reasons why I went to college. So I keep it high on my list of Tarantino movies.
Nick, how many Quentin Tarantino movies have you seen?
I've seen part of Django Unchained and part of Kill Bill. That's it.
Okay.
That's it?
Yeah.
It's good to know. Hey. This is supposed to be an educational experience. It's National Intern Day. We're not going to give him the loser game show sound. We're trying to lead him the right way.
Tell him, hey, these
are on Netflix. Inglourious Basterds and Pulp Fiction are both on Netflix. Do you have Netflix or at least a family member who gives you an account info or
yes.
an account login?
Yeah.
Do me a favor.
Again.
I'm going to watch Once Upon a Time in Hollywood tonight. Watch the next time I see you. You better have seen either Pulp Fiction or Inglourious Basterds.
Okay.
Okay?
Deal.
We'll get a movie report next time he's in here.
Gotcha.
Earl Thomas did some talking today. Earl Thomas was the last leg of this Legion of Boom from the team that went to back-to-back Super Bowls with the Seahawks earlier in the decade. And he got hurt last year. And when he got hurt, it was shortly after he had contract talks with the Seahawks and thought he was being messed around with. And when you mess around with somebody's money, you really don't know what the reaction is going to be. Earl Thomas, as he was getting carted off, flashed the middle finger to the Seahawks sideline. So Jacina Anderson sat down with, from ESPN, Jacina Anderson sat down with Earl Thomas and asked him about it.
I gave Pete, you know, the middle finger. Because I felt like he wasn't being honest with me. I was basically talking shit to Pete. Like, when Pete came, trying to, like, act like he, you know, concerned, I was like, you won, bro. Like, you know, just kept it moving.
So at the time that you gave him the dirty bird, he said nothing?
No, we haven't spoken.
Do you regret giving Pete Carroll the dirty bird?
I don't regret my decision. If my teammates felt like it was towards them, I regret that part. But I don't regret doing it to Pete.
Who calls the middle finger a dirty bird? Anybody do that?
It was the classy
Jacina
way.
Anderson does.
Yeah, she dressed it up pretty nice.
Really? It's classier than saying the middle finger?
Bird. I don't know. The dirty bird just has kind of like, I don't know. She just kind of dressed it up differently, I guess.
No, that just sounds like something your lover, a weird thing your lover would call you mid-intimate act.
Some kind of like a weird maneuver?
No. Something they just call you thinking it's sexy, and you're just like, ah.
You dirty bird.
Ah, this, I'm very uncomfortable right now.
What?
These Seattle teams, man. KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner, they're the only two defensive players left from this Legion of Boom. And I really feel like now that this is 2019, you're going to see a lot of not just year-end list, decade-end list over the next 6 months. If I'm thinking about the best NFL teams from the last decade, those Seattle teams, that's where I go first. I think those Seattle teams were the best teams of this decade. No other champ had the balance that they had. Russell Wilson, Marshawn Lynch, the Legion of Boom. Just that together, you had a top three running back, a top five quarterback, a top three linebacker, and a top three corner of this decade. And you could argue a top three safety with Earl Thomas, and maybe even Cam Chancellor a part of that mix too, and that Michael Bennett guy. Think of just the personalities. That team had the most personality I've seen on an NFL team in over 20 years. The last time I remembered an NFL team with that much swagger, you'd probably have to go to the early to mid-90s Cowboys. Michael Irvin, Deion Sanders. That defense. You just have Jimmy Johnson as the head coach, Jerry Jones as the owner. You probably have to go all the way back to those early 90s, mid-90s Dallas Cowboys to find a team that had as much swagger as these Seattle teams had, but they only won one Super Bowl. All that talent, they won one Super Bowl. They should have won two, though. Russell Wilson threw the football and Malcolm Butler picked it off. If Seattle runs the ball there and they score, I think this isn't even seen as a hot take. I'm not even sure if it's seen as a hot take right now to say that those Seattle teams were the best teams we've seen from the last decade. 336-777-1600 on Twitter at Sports Hub Triad. What do you think? I think we're going to remember these Seahawks the way we remember the Mets in the 80s. All that talent, all that swagger, but only producing one title. The Mets winning in 86, but you had Doc Gooden and you had Daryl Strawberry. You had that rare mix of personality and talent blended together, but what'd you do with it? You won one title, and you were close at other opportunities, but off-the-field stuff tore the team apart. And with Seattle, it was just so much ego that you knew when you were watching it that this was just a moment in history, a moment in time that could not last very long, and it didn't. Yes, it does.
At first, I was going to say no because they only won one title, but kind of looking back on it, the only other team that would probably, I would say, probably match the swagger of Seattle over the past, I don't know, 10 years or so would be the Jim Harbaugh of San Francisco 49ers. Because they were kind of there, too. They didn't win a Super Bowl. They got to one, lost to the Ravens.
Who were the players that had that kind of swagger?
Well, Colin Kaepernick.
Well, Kaepernick wasn't a swagger guy. He became a polarizing figure later, but he was just a guy who was known for flexing his muscle. Look at the stories with the Seattle players. Marshawn Lynch, the words he would say, even in the media with, I'm just here so I don't get fined. Earl Thomas giving a middle finger to his sideline.
And he was the quiet
Richard
one.
Sherman.
Yeah. Richard Sherman did a lot of talking for them.
Can you, just for reminiscing sake, pull up the Aaron Andrews interview after the San Francisco game in the playoffs? Crabtree, why are you trying me? Why are you going to try me with a sorry corner like Crabtree? L.O.B. I mean, Sherman and Bennett. The best players might have been the quieter ones with Bobby Wagner and K.J. Wright. Those players were great, but they were just quieter. Cam Chancellor didn't do a whole lot of talking. Why? Because he didn't have to. Earl Thomas is there for that. And Richard Sherman and Michael Bennett and Marshawn Lynch. And it's almost like the Florida Gators from the late 2000s. The star player was Russell Wilson for these Seattle teams. And the star player of that Florida team was Tim Tebow. Both of which, very quiet guys that don't step on toes. And everyone who surrounded them turned out to be interesting and polarizing. All right, do we have this interview? This is from the NFC playoffs. Richard Sherman picking off a pass to end that game in the end zone. Michael Crabtree was the receiver that was going up for that football. And Richard Sherman was just offended at the idea that the 49ers would try him with a receiver like Crabtree. Let's reminisce. Hey, let's get out of here. This might be volatile.
That was like a straight throw it back fire wrestling promo. It felt like he was about to go defend the tag team championship.
Excellent. There was so much happening on the field in that moment. It's loud. It's crazy. Aaron Andrews had questions prepared, ready to go for the winning interview. But it is great journalism. It's great sideline reporting. It's great listening. And an even better question for her to simply ask Richard Sherman after hearing him talk about someone who tried him who was sorry, don't talk about me again, to ask who was talking about you. It's as good of a question as you can ask. And that's why Aaron Andrews is as good as she is. The Drive is brought to you by our friends at Pie Guys Pizza and More. Try the Moravian Sugar Cane Pie that I've been telling you about this week. Also the Graham Slam Pizza. We love Pie Guys. Online, pieguys.com. Visit them in Clemens. Kinnaman Village Commons, right off of Louisville Clemens Road. You are listening to WSJS Winston-Salem, WCOG Greensboro, WPC in Burlington, WMFR High Point. Those signals make it up the Triad Sports Hub.
Come on! This is the Sports Hub at AM 600, AM 920. Now back to the Drive with Josh Graham.
You can listen to Dash Baseball on the Sports Hub Thursday night, 7 o'clock. This week is no different. The voice of the Dash, Joe Weil, now joining us as he does every week. Submit movie lines that you would like integrated into the broadcast tonight at Sports Hub Triads, the way to go about doing that. Joe's on Twitter at Joe_Weil. Before we get to the movie lines, this week seems like it's the slow week in the summer where people try to fix baseball. It happens around this time every single year. The topic of conversation this time around is robo-umpires. There's the Independent Atlantic League that had it in its All-Star game, and things move seamlessly, apparently, according to players in it. Eric Burns is for this. It's not like a Jefferson's-like machine behind the catcher. It's a human catcher who has an earpiece and an electronic strike zone, and he's told balls and strikes after each and every pitch, and then he just tells the crowd what it was, pitch or strike. Would you be for that? What do you think about the robo umpire?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, Josh, and it's funny how the Atlantic League has become the guinea pig in a lot of ways for Major League Baseball to try out these certain things. I'm not as opposed to this as the stealing of first base. That's going to take some time for me to get used to, and I'm not really for it, honestly. But I think this is where we're inevitably going to be going, just because this is how everything is going. We're leaning a lot more on technology, and if the umpire has something like this, I think it helps, because the umpire is on TV. I think they get a bad rap because all the viewers are watching games, and if the serve a pitch looks like it hit the outside corner and then they call it a ball, they look really bad. And this is what every broadcast is doing now with the boxes and the strike zone that you can see visually on a TV. So I think that this is something that ultimately, as we get older, I think will take shape. It'll obviously take some time, but I think we'll inevitably get there, because I think that's what we've sort of done on everything. I mean, that's why we have replay now. We have machines to show the right calls just so we can get it right. And I think that this is going to be another step toward inevitably getting to that point.
I think the last horizon is convincing umpires it's the right thing. I think that they hear time and time again that they got a call wrong. And it's very difficult, like you mentioned, when you have the video replay accessible to you. I think what needs to be reinforced to the umpires is that you're not being replaced. You just aren't calling balls and strikes. You're the one delivering it to the crowd as normal, but you're not being phased out in the sense that you're not a game manager any longer. Somebody has to call safe and out at the plate and safe and out on the base pass. Somebody needs to get changes from the dugouts in the defensive infield and in the outfield, and lineup changes with the batting order, or at least with designated hitters coming in. So the umpire is not completely being phased out. I think when we use terms like robo umpire, people just jump to the conclusion that we're phasing out the umpire altogether. That's not what this is.
Right, exactly. And the only thing I would say is that umpires will feel, I think, a little bit worried about this because of the fact that you are taking a part of the job out, and therefore that could affect pay.
They're being emasculated. That's what's happening.
Yeah. I mean, a little bit, and there's part of that as well. I mean, yeah, and I think now what's interesting about this whole thing is that these guys, just like the players in a lot of ways, they come up through the ranks. They get their reps in doing, a lot of games and refining their own approach and, obviously establishing the strike zone and making sure they can get all the calls right, and that's how they ultimately get to the big leagues. The thing about this is that I don't know how you differentiate between who's a good umpire and who's not if the electronics are essentially calling the strikes and balls. So I think that's a hurdle that obviously needs to get over. The reality is, we rely on technology so much, and I just think that this is inevitably what's going to happen. It's interesting because it's just like the Nets that we saw in Chicago. We knew that some team and at some point that inevitably it was going to be pushed down the line each way. I kind of think the same is going to happen here, and it depends on just what the time frame for it is.
The voice of the Dash, Joe Weil, with us. We'll do our movie lines in just a bit. The Carolina Panthers open training camp yesterday, or they reported yesterday. Camp starts today with the kickoff party, and I'm not sure if you know this, Joe, but they're going to be in the dorms for the next 3 weeks at Wofford College. Carolina Panthers players, they're in the dorms, so it had us thinking about dorm stories from our college days, and we've been going over a couple of those. Did you stay in the dorms in college?
Yeah, so we did. So we actually, it was funny, my first roommate and I, we got lucky because we stayed in the freshman hall at Boston University. It's called Warren Towers. And we actually got the big room. So every other room was sort of just kind of straight down. It was really small, two beds, whatever you have it. But we had the corner room actually had a lot more space. So we had a futon in it that we'd have people stay in. And I think the worst story that I have is that one time, there was a girl that was on her floor, and she was really messed up, and she got intoxicated, and she just fell asleep on the bed, and I got forced to sleep on our terrible futon because of the fact that we had it. So that was, and the futon was great to have for watching TV, but not to sleep on. Like, nobody ever wanted to sleep on it. Well, inevitably somebody did every once in a while, but because of this situation, because we were trying to be good guys, I get forced on the futon, sleep on it. I get like 2 or 3 hours of sleep. So it was never the most ideal thing. In my bed, my freshman year, my friends always made fun of me because it was a rock. So I inevitably increased in terms of comfortability over time. And I'm not even sure that was a word.
Oh, college. Let's go into what Joe Weil did on the air last week. Movie lines that the audience sent in that Joe integrated into his play-by-play.
This is a tough situation for Andrew Perez. Second and third, one out. And he doesn't want to lock up the dash in a loss. So Z coming out essentially asking, you want to go to jail or do you want to go home?
That was UVA quarterback Bryce Perkins suggesting that line last week at ACC kickoff. He's a big Denzel Washington fan and a big fan. Was that He Got Game or Training Day that I was referencing? I think it was Training Day.
I think that was Training Day. Hey, Josh, I know since you asked that drip question to Cam Newton last year, you should get him to get a movie line in.
Ah, we'll have to do that. We'll see if Cam Newton will have a movie line when we next catch up with Cam Newton. But I was watching, or let's get to the next line. The next line from Joe Weil from last week.
Beautiful scenery, though, in Winston-Salem with the dark blue clouds above us. The dark blue sky hovering over BB&T Ballpark and a great Thirsty Thursday crowd on hand. They've been trying to wield the dash this entire ball game, trying to rally the home team. Listen to them, children of the night, what music they make. The 1-2. Outside, count it 2-2.
It's just so well done, Joe. You did an excellent job with that. I saw The Lion King a few days ago. I'm going to go see the new Tarantino movie later on tonight. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So I'm going to go Tarantino line here. I'm just going to go from the movie I watched last night, Inglourious Basterds. That's a bingo.
I love it.
All right.
I love it. Was that when they were pretending to be Italian?
Oh, no. That would be Arrivederci. But a little bit later on, it was Christoph Waltz when he correctly guessed a plot of Brad Pitt's character, and he said, that's a bingo. Isn't that what you say? No, you just say bingo. Okay, so that's a bingo. What is your favorite Quentin Tarantino movie, by the way?
Oh, God, that's a good question. I got to go with Pulp Fiction, but I mean, I love every one I've seen. So Kill Bill, Kill Bill 2, Inglourious Basterds, also Django Unchained, amazing. Reservoir Dogs, they're all so good. But Pulp Fiction's obviously number one for me.
I like this one we just got on Twitter here from Van Wilder. Worrying is like a rocking chair. It gives you, it gives you somewhere, but it doesn't. Let me make sure that this is absolutely correct. Hold on a sec. I had it right in front of me. All right. Here we go. Worrying's like a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but it doesn't get you anywhere. I had it written down, but my handwriting sucks.
Are we going with that one?
That's what we're going with.
Okay.
Definitely going with that line from Van Wilder. Worrying's like a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but it doesn't get you anywhere. As for, oh man, this is pretty good. The truth hurts. Maybe. But not as much as jumping on a bicycle with a seat missing. But it hurts.
What?
What
movie is that?
That's The Naked Gun. Truth hurts. Maybe not as much as jumping on a bicycle with a seat missing, but it hurts.
What? How's he supposed to put this in a...
Des, every week, how often do I have to tell you that it's not our job to figure out how he works it in?
We can at least throw him a bone.
No, we're not throwing him a bone. I threw him a bone with that's a bingo. That's a bingo is as easy as it gets, Des.
Oh, my God.
I think I threw him a bone with that's a bingo.
Oh, my
God. All right, fine, Des. You tell me which of these that you like the most, because we're getting a ton of them on Twitter. I have fallen for you like a blind roofer. We thought yous was a toad. And nobody makes me bleed my own blood, nobody. Also, life's a garden, dig it. Which of those do you like the most out of those four?
Kind of like the roofer one, the first one you said.
All right, from Hot Shots and Tom on Twitter, I have fallen for you like a blind roofer. There you go. Joe, are you ready to go?
I'm ready to do this.
All right.
Ready to do it.
We'll hear it in 2 hours right here on the Sports Hub. Thanks for the visit, Joe.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Jess.
You got it. Every time we do this, Des, you're always thinking about Joe.
Well, yeah, Joe's a friend. I don't want to put him in a bad spot. I mean,
no, we're not putting him in a bad spot. Some of these I can't throw his way. We are doing him a favor by not throwing some of these at Joe.
So we,
some of which have curse words in it.
Yeah.
Some of which, I mean, I could have thrown Did I Stutter, Eat My Shorts at him. That.
What movie was that?
That's The Breakfast Club, Des.
Oh, my gosh.
I could have done that, but that would be unfriendly. You're trying to think situationally. No, just throw him a line that is FCC appropriate and the Dash aren't going to be mad about, and then let the artist paint.
To date.
Let the artist paint.
So I've got, that's a bingo.
Yeah.
Worrying is like a rocking chair, gives you something to do, but you don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
And I have fallen for you like a blind roofer.
Oh, and the truth hurts. Maybe not as much as jumping on a bicycle with the seat missing, but it hurts. Facts.
I would hope so.
So, that is something you can catch Dash Baseball 7 o'clock right here on the Sports Hub. In a little over 30 minutes, we're going to be talking to the coach from the last two seasons of Last Chance U, Jason Brown, who has been under fire for the way that he coaches, the manner in which he coaches. Some people say he shouldn't be around young people, but that's really been the narrative that's followed all four seasons of Last Chance U. It has me thinking, when we criticize the guy from Mississippi and now Jason Brown in Kansas, is our criticism that these guys could be friendlier, or do we just not like the way the sausage is made? When we have that much access and we're seeing how these machines are built, these football teams, how they are constructed across the country. When we don't like what we see, is it really the coach that we're indicting or the way the sausage is being made for football? The same way, like if we watched how chicken McNuggets are made, we probably wouldn't like what's being done. We don't want to see the labor, just give me the baby. Does it work for football too? That's something I'm interested in asking Jason Brown when he joins us in 30 minutes. You are listening to WSJS Winston-Salem, WCOG Greensboro, WPCM Burlington, WMFR High Point. Those signals make up the Triad Sports Hub.